financial feminist. The financial feminist. Now it's time for the financial feminist. Yeah.
Welcome to the Financial Feminist Podcast. I'm your host, the Financial Feminist, and this is our news podcast, taking a global outlook on feminist wins making the news this week. I'm recording this from and acknowledge the Gadigal of the Eora Nation, which for our international listeners is an acknowledgement of the traditional custodians of the land I'm recording this episode on. And in doing so, I pay my respects to elders past and present. For those of you wondering, this podcast is based in Australia, hence our acknowledgement of country, and the deliciously Tim Tam-fueled Australian accents you'll hear on the podcast. The information we discuss is based on personal reflections alone, so it's not professional advice and doesn't take into account your personal financial needs. So it might be worth talking to a licensed financial professional, particularly if we've left you feeling more motivated to take action with your money. We've flagged some resources, including the Register of Financial Advisors and Support Services on our website, that could be useful to you. Now, today, we're really going to be delving into news stories that discuss finances and feminism. And we do that to acknowledge the wins, but also learn from what's happening around the world with a more intersectional approach to feminism. And we're following the money because money means power. Now, let's look at some feminist and financial news making headlines this week with me, your host, the Financial Feminist. Our first story looks at a move the government of Australia recently moved to help close the retirement gender wealth gap. I know we're starting with such good news this week. Under this move, parents who receive government-funded paid parental leave will also be paid superannuation on top of the payment under this new government policy. Now, what does that mean? Well, superannuation, or super, is the retirement payment system in Australia that you earn throughout your working life, and it's expected that you access it when you reach retirement age. The idea behind it is your retirement funds are then invested in the market and grow over time until you're ready to access them. The Australian Minister for Women, Katie Gallagher, said, "The data is clear. When women take time out of the workforce to raise children, it impacts their retirement incomes, with women retiring on average with about 25% less super than men. It's therefore a feminist issue because there is a significant gender-based wealth gap that people experience when they retire. In short, your gender in Australia determines the level of comfort you experience in retirement on average." The Australian Treasury Review, which was undertaken in 2020, of retirement incomes, clearly identified that the gender pay gap in retirement was because women earn less than men over their careers, which then flowed through to their super or retirement income. This announcement to pay super on parental leave is the work of so many advocates and feminists. This announcement is the work of many advocates and feminists who've been calling for superannuation to be paid on parental leave. That includes the Women's Economic Equality Task Force, which was set up by the government and suggested this move recently when it was asked, how could you improve the financial position of women? Now, why is this such a financial issue? Well, without this move made, it's really up to your employer in Australia as to whether you get paid superannuation when you take parental leave, and that adds up over time. It's women who disproportionately take that parental leave. The Workforce Gender Equality Agency found that when it comes to taking leave to have children, women account for 88% of all primary carers' leave and men account for just 12%. And how much of a difference does that make? Well, an ABC News report credited the 2021 Grattan Institute calculation on this issue. They found that paid super on parental leave adds up to quite a bit. And here's the calculation. If a woman took two 18-week stints of parental leave and took that in her early 30s, she would then get as much as an extra $356 a year in retirement, that amount depending on her level of income, but $356 a year extra, that's considerable. This new scheme kicks into effect from the 1st of July 2025, so set your watches, about a year and a bit to go, and it stands to benefit 180,000 families a year, so worth bearing in mind if you know anyone thinking of having a family in the years ahead. Overall, it's a great move in making parenting children something that doesn't just fall to women, because if all genders see that there's a financial benefit to take that parental leave they're offered, you're much more likely to see parents of all genders taking the leave they're provided with to spend the time with their children, and we know how valuable that is throughout their lifetime. And what can you do? You can help to break down that barrier by having active conversations about this move. Because when the system changes, including policy to reduce barriers of closing the gender wealth gap in retirement, it's really important that we then spread the word of the change so that more people can benefit from it, including those who want to have children personally and those who want to see fewer women retire into poverty. And that's worth talking about. For our next story, this is one for all you art fans out there. Now, we've all heard of art programs that engage children of the arts, and that's very commendable. But what if a program could go a step further, not only having children create art, but also giving them a source of income from selling those artworks? Well, we need to talk about the Children's Art Gallery. It was co-funded in Nigeria by an artist alongside an entrepreneur and philanthropist who is passionate about children and their development. At the time of opening, it was the first gallery in Africa to exhibit and sell children's artwork. The Guardian recently profiled one artist who last year made $650 from a sale of two paintings, all by the age of 11. That child said, and I quote, "I look forward to selling more of my artworks to get a better future and build a museum when I'm older." The gallery showcases the paintings and drawings of children aged between 4 and 17, and when the artworks sell, the children receive about 80% of the proceeds, which isn't a bad commission split. It's a feminist issue because the gap in terms of gender economic equity in the world of art is significant. Figures published by the Maddox Gallery, linked in our show notes, show that of the $196.6 billion spent at art auctions in the decade between 2008-2019, the works that were produced by women accounted for less than 10% of sales. I took that really softly because it's actually lower than you think. Because female artists account for 2% of total sales. That puts the gender pay gap between men and women at an astounding $192 billion. That article also cites Yale University analysis that of the top 18 art institutions in the US context, male artists account for 87% of the works in those institutions. Female artists are not only underrepresented in major art galleries, but in global sales too. So when female artists are struggling in terms of visibility, programs that enable them to have both a gallery space and earn an income from art at a young age might help dislodge the existing gender gap. That might take some time, given many artists aren't recognized until much later in their career, but increasing the number of artists earning an income through their art is a great starting point. It's a financial issue too, because about 40% of Nigerians live on less than $2.15 a day, which is the global measure of extreme poverty. When you have a program that can provide direct financial support and skill development, that can make a significant contribution over time, particularly when matched with government support. And it also provides young people with an income stream to help them access opportunities. Programs like this can also help cut through the current bias in society when it comes to who can afford to be an artist. A study published by the Smithsonian found that across 160 years of US history, it is consistently the children from wealthy families who pursue careers in the arts. What does that look like? Well, households where income is $1 million are 10 times more likely to become an artist compared to households with an income of $100,000. This is particularly relevant and worth exploring for anyone who's listened to Pulp's Common People or watched Saltburn recently, when you think that studying art shouldn't just be accessible based on who your parents are. Now, this gallery won't fix the issue of poverty in Nigeria. Many issues like this require a combination of factors like political will, policy change, and consistent program funding, which is sorely lacking across the world. But providing a program which engages children in the arts, a field of education which we take for granted and which has become increasingly undermined and underfunded in favor of STEM, that is worth highlighting. And if you want to find out more about the Children's Art Gallery, we've linked the Guardian feature in the show notes so you can read more about it. Because the answer to the question, can I be an artist, shouldn't be, how much do your parents earn? For our final question, it's an interesting one. Does kids ruin your career? Well, yes, according to Lily Allen. The pop star opened up honestly and said, "My children ruined my career," when reflecting on the challenges of balancing a career with motherhood. She made these comments when speaking on the Radio Times podcast this week, and a CBS News report quotes Lily as follows. I never really had a strategy when it comes to career, but yes, my children ruined my career. I mean, I love them and they complete me, but in terms of pop stardom, totally ruined it. It really annoys me when people say you can have it all, because quite frankly, you can't. Some people choose their career over their children, and that's their prerogative. Now, we are not doubting Lily's words here, because that's not something we do. Instead, we're going to engage with the issues she's brought up. So this is a feminist issue because it's the truth that mothers are not allowed to say. And there's a fantastic write-up in the Cosmopolitan that I've linked in the show notes. The article reflects how women, and particularly mothers, are often at the receiving end of some of the harshest criticism and daring to suggest that parenting may come at the detriment to career progression, at least in the early years, and how that's akin to blasphemy in some circles. And I wanted to bridge the gap between someone like Lily Allen, who you might see as being really financially privileged, but it brings in an issue that affects all women and all women who choose to have children. And that financial issue is called the motherhood penalty. The motherhood penalty essentially refers to a care penalty, and it falls disproportionately to women as mothers because having children has a higher impact on women and their employment rates, transitions, and status than it does on men. The data for Australia, for example, shows a significant gender difference adding up to the motherhood penalty. Women essentially reduce their paid work hours by about 35% across the first 5 years after the arrival of children. And again, on average, that means they earn 55% less at their pre-pregnancy wage. Now we're going to contrast that based on gender. What's it like for men, you say, when they choose to become parents? Well, men's hours of paid work drop only during the first month of parenthood before returning to previous levels. There's a reason we didn't come for Lily Allen with pitchforks. Firstly, we don't own a pitchfork. Secondly, we don't do that to other feminists. And thirdly, she's absolutely right in that having children and taking on a caring role, on average, as a woman and mother, her income, lifetime earnings, and ability to accrue retirement savings would be impacted after having children. Now, Lily Allen is fine. She was promoting her new podcast on BBC Sounds in that Radio Times interview. And judging by the media coverage, her comments accrued across different outlets, has attracted interest in what she has to say, and that's likely to translate into more viewers for the podcast. She's doing absolutely fine. But what can you do? We're all at risk of a gender gap throughout our lifetime, depending on the gender we hold. And it's worth really discussing and focusing on the motherhood penalty, because regardless of whether or not you personally choose to have children, others around you might. Yes, no question, the government should be moving policy and better funding, access and availability of things like childcare to help cut down on this barrier. But if it's something you're thinking about in terms of having children and you have a partner by your side who's aware of the issue, talk about it. And if they're prepared to then share that unpaid labour at home, share the caring duties and look at their own work schedule so that both of you can continue to thrive at work and earn your retirement, as FYI, most retirement funds are still in your individual names, that is a partner worth investing in. And that's our news making financial feminist headlines this week. If the headlines we shared have made you think more about your finances and you feel inspired to take action, we've got some fantastic existing resources linked on our website, thefinancialfeminist.com. I've been The Financial Feminist. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Financial Feminist. Come back soon.